Two or three more questions. By the way, while Nancy's getting the mic, the leader of the South African trade unions, Kasatu, was actually standing right there 9 weeks ago, and some of us had the privilege to hear his contribution. It was very, very major areas of overlap. But as well as Zimbabwe, stood right there and made those comments.
Nancy Brommer from the Professional Staff Congress of the City University of New York, American Federation of Teachers. I'm curious about the attitude among Indian workers around militarization, the American Empire, the war in Iraq, and what kind of resistance you are creating, or you know, if there is that anti-war movement, what it looks like. For us, of course, you know, we're trying to push our unions to a more anti-war position, and the unemployment rates are so high, and so many American youth are ending up joining the military because they don't have other options. And I'm wondering, and also there's a large number of American workers who are hired in as outsourced military positions. So I'm wondering to what extent that dynamic is true in India and what your anti-war movement looks like.
I'd like to just ask again this question about nativism in the United States, the anti-immigrant backlash, the racism that is being put forward by working class Americans in and outside of unions, the policies of a number of unions in the Federation, the FL-CIO, that are restrictionist against immigrant Indians are from wherever throughout the world who are trying to make a living. I think we should be very careful not blaming the victim. And there's a tendency, even within the WTO framework, to blame the victims who are working in what are called body shops in the United States for, we talk about 40, 60 hours, we're talking about 80, 120 hours. And I guess we're talking not just in the high technology sector, but also within the low-wage, low-skill workforce as drivers and so forth. And I'm just wondering if there is any way to bridge this racist nativism and to create greater levels of working-class solidarity, which I think is the essence to this notion of global worker unification that we're all talking about.
I just have a position, or a question rather, about your position on trade union unity. I understand what you're saying about how unions are stronger when they're united, but I'm wondering how you would respond to the counter argument, you know, that members deserve to have options and choices, and that in fact the consolidation of unions can only lead to bureaucratization, and you know, that competition is actually a good thing for unions to have.
Hi, I'm Angela, and I work for SEIU as a secretary. SEIU is an international union representing healthcare workers, public sector, building service. And I know SEIU has endorsed the Global Labor Institute, and we are doing a lot of work globally in China, you know, because we feel that's the only way we can take on large corporations, it's to do it globally. But I know also there is some discussion lately around the AFL-CIO, and I'm not so sure how it is in India in terms of the labor movement, if there is an umbrella like the AFL-CIO. But I'm sure most people here now know that SEIU has proposed, has made some proposals to the AFL-CIO about restructuring and what we need to do, because seeing that labor density is decreasing, and so we have lost the election and all the other stuff that's happening within labor. And so I know we're talking about mergers and all of that. I'm not sure what the labor movement in India is doing in terms of labor unions, how united you are in terms of those discussions too. Because we're sitting here, if we need to take on corporations like Walmart, like one union just can't do it. So I'm not sure what your unions are saying. If we're going to take on outsourcing, you know, what are the steps we're doing? So can you just talk a little more about that, please?
My name is Luis Loria. I'm a retired from Local 377, and thanks to the beautiful panel of, and you visit here in the United States, nice Indian people. And well, I was going to say that about child labor. I was a laboring child, and of course I didn't lack of anything, and it taught me a lot of things, and I appreciate that labor, you know, in my childhood. And I'll tell you why, because I know how to sew a button, I know how to saddle a horse, I know how to bring down a cow. And today I see, you know, old, even young girls, young boys, the only thing they have, the game, they have a television, they never wash a dish, okay, they never help the mother, they make face. I was not going to make a face, and that I wouldn't then make face to anybody else. Now, the other thing is that Mr. Sweeney says something very powerful. And I think the whole thing, it's all together with politics. You have to get the power, political power. Take the space back, the political space. And reminds me that 60 years ago, somebody like Chavez with a lot of power, also a general, that it was a great man and did it the most beautiful labor development in the whole world. And that was Juan Domingo Perón. Thank you very much.
I want to thank you before anything for coming to give your, to share with us your experience in India. I would like to ask a question. Students that just graduate from college in India, they are the one that is getting the job, high tech and engineering, and at the same time they are paying not in Indians' money but in dollars. These students or this new type of workers are creating like a medium social class. I definitely understand they must feel very comfortable getting American money different from India's. And to my question after that is, are this kind of new social medium class causing problems or interfering with the union worker or the union labor in India? Thank you.
It's not a question, it's more a statement. The brother mentioned something that I feel very strongly about. You did too also, I believe. That should have resonated throughout this whole room. It was about that you were in prison for a number of years. Mm-hmm. Okay? The fact that 90% of the people in this room can't relate to that experience. That's the way our labor movement used to be. And there are a lot of people in this room that believe that that's where it has to go back to, mm-hmm. in order to get to where you are now. Because our density is so low that we're at the bottom now, and that's how we need to pick ourselves up. Do you feel that way, or are you kind of leaning that that's the way we need to go, or do we need to go in another direction to build up our numbers again? Thank you, brother.
Washington Sachs, local bondage too. Now, I heard it speak about the coal industry. It's just the coal industry alone you have there. What are the other industries you have? And what about your literacy rate? I mean, how literate are the people of India?
What I propose we do now is ask the panelists, obviously, to respond to those last couple of questions, but also maybe make some concluding remarks, you know, general kind of perspectives in the few minutes we have left. And Ananya, if you want to make a contribution as well, please do so. And then we can wrap it up.
Other than the coal industry, we are having manganese, iron, steel, and even to a certain extent, we are having a gold industry also there. And majority of the public sectors, we are having all mining industries are there. And I can't exactly give the percentage of the literacy in it, but very poor literacy percentage is there. So majority of my friend has already told that India is a very poor country, and in that when the people can go for a dollar a day, how they are going to survive? So the literacy rate is very less because people don't go to the schools and colleges. Colleges is a different question. The people do not go for a primary education also. And another thing my friend has asked that about the people who are becoming these graduates and fresh graduates and doing these outsourcing jobs and coming, are they creating a problem for the trade union movement? I do say that the younger generations, that day generations, once upon a time, the people used to leave their jobs and come to the trade union movement as a full-timer. But now the situation is in the global market, in the global economy, the youth, in which fashion they have to come forward, the same fashion they are not coming forward. The youth, we have to educate the youth, we have to mobilize them, we have to politicize them, then only I think that we will have a broader struggle and a sustained struggle. What you said is absolutely correct. It is too difficult for these younger graduates. What he has said, that they don't do any jobs. We are talking about the child labor, and this type of people does not do, just they use their mobiles and put their jeans pants and move in such a fashion. They think that they are the more liberated people of this city. So they don't forget what type of life their parents have led and what type of life their children are going to lead. Because now through outsourcing, instead of doing 8-hour jobs, they are doing 12-hour jobs. And that day is not far that their children are going to be the 100% unemployed citizens of that world. So thinking in that fashion, that is why it said the people are more selfish, and that selfishness has to come out. And the people should work in a wider sense, that each individual should contribute and each individual is responsible to the progress of the city, society, country and the whole world as a whole. So that question we have to take up, and in the broader sense, I think that is why I told that taking all these sectors, not only the organized and unorganized sectors, I said that all the women, men, young, youth, children, students of this should come together, and unless they form in different fashions, because the students' movement, human rights movement, civil rights movement, social movements, all should come together and unanimously stand, then only I think that whatever we want to need, whether to be a political power or getting out of this political power and having a system where we will not be exploited and everybody will have an equal right to stay in the society, that can be possible. I do believe that there is a problem, and we have to educate them, and a good organization has to be built up with these youths in this country and the world as a whole. Thank you very much.
When we reason too much, we become defeatist. And when we have dreams like Chandra has, we always jump and get into something, you know. And that's really the strength of us. She has a dream which really drives all of us. I mean, we would be reluctant to get into some situation, but she will go without even thinking what's the pros and cons. You know? So there are also advantages of really having strong dreams, and there are also strength of having reasoning into it. I guess my job is to reason here, and her job is to give the dreams here. So having said that...
But our dreams will come one day too.
Right. That's right. that's exactly what drives us, actually, what I said. I think there's really hardly anything that I really need to respond, except, I mean, the nativism question is a too serious question to be really answered in such a kind of a dialogue here. I think I really don't have an answer to it, because I think we all have our own experience of how to deal with it. We have the major question of caste and indigenous people as one of the dividing issues of Indian working class movement, Indian trade movement, and we are addressing in our own way. As I said, there's a very strong, much more stronger social discrimination and division on that issue than many other working class movements of. And I can share that, but I think it will be really far going beyond the kind of what we're discussing now. But it's a very serious question, and NTUI as an organization is very much rooted into supporting. We demand, in fact, one of our central demand of right of livelihood is, you know, we are one of the few unions in India which support right of livelihood as a concept. And our notion of right of livelihood comes that native people should have right of resources. No one can take away the resources until you can give them jobs. You know, so it is very much linked to the idea of that the right of the indigenous people over their land, over their water, over their forest is a must. And as I said, the Forest Workers Forum is in the forefront of that struggle, both fighting for indigenous people's rights and also for labor rights. So we have our own experience, and I can share that in a bilateral way. My young friend there said, you know, I think one is confusing between what is called competition and democracy. You know, if you want to really have a lot of changes, a lot of innovations, and you need not always have competition. All you need is a good democracy. So I think there's a confusion. I personally and our union believe that, well, no doubt, bureaucratization of the unions are a major problem. And people like us who have come from very strong union hierarchical tradition have faced them, and we know that's the problem. But I don't think that will really come out if you have unions starts competing and there are multiple unions. It can only come when democracy gets into the union. And as a result, we all have. I have come from a very strongly hierarchical union federation. Comrade Chandra has come from a far more hierarchical political tradition than I have come from. What is interesting about our new trade initiative is that's a very flat organization. We haven't yet any structure on a national level beside a secretariat. That's very interesting. You know, we are trying to innovate new methods of trying to find out. We don't have a secretariat. We don't have actually at this moment really called central spokesman of the union. I'm not sure. I'm not saying that's not important. I think it's important. We might also land up with doing that thing at some point of time. But fundamentally, and the paper that we have circulated here, we are very clear. We have grown from grassroots, plant level, village level, shop level unions, and we are very clear the residuary of our powers in the new federation will remain in the plant level. It will never, never go to the national level. That's, we are very clear. We are ready to fight this out for another 10 years if we have, but we are very sure we will stick to this principle, and we want to build a new federation based on these principles. We will only allow national centers to speak on our behalf what we want, and not what they acquire by virtue of their office there. That's a very fundamental. To me, that's the important way of really allowing flexibility, allowing competition to take place within the union structure. And if you read our small note, you'll see that's one of our central concern. That is true. So, anything else? I think let me say, it's been a very interesting evening. I really don't want to give any more kind of ideas here. I think we had enough of ideas here. What we need to do is pick up some of them. And I'm surely going to meet with some of the union leaders, SIO, and unite people. And we wish and we want to get to some concrete way of collaborating with each other. And I'm sure when we sit down with senior leaders, your top level leaders, and sit down on the two sides of the table, I will find some commonality. We will find some differences, but I think we'll find more commonality, and we'll figure out some way of trying to bridge this gap and build up as my colleague Chandra says, let the dreams not go away. We are here to fight for it. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to congratulate the audience because I thought the questions were excellent. And, you know, having lived in both countries, I thought that we pretty much addressed the points that we usually think about as the sort of the points that we need to clear up between the two countries. So I thought they were really excellent questions. These are the kinds of meetings from which we will get ideas about how to go about doing the work that we want to do. And, you know, I have lived there and I've lived here, and I see how little people know about each other's struggles and how many myths we have about the peoples of both the countries. It's easy to look at a country and think of it in this monolithic way that it's full of this one thing. And I think Indians have as many misperceptions about struggles in the US as the other way around. So these meetings really help to know that just by the kind of questions you ask, we find out where your politics are at, which is really the point where we can come to an agreement on. So I just want to thank you all again for engaging with us, and this is the way we will figure out the way forward.
The war question I just had. Sorry, I think very important point you raised about. We all hate Bush, but we like American people. Let's say that's very clearly. We are very clear about it. I think the anti-Bush is far more stronger in India than it is in the United States, I guess.
Bring him over here.
But we also have a...
Through outsourcing.
I would say we have a very strong sentiment against, let's say, what's happening globally. But in this, we are very weak. I would say we are really inspired by the kind of mobilization that the, you know, that the people have done in the United States and UK and Germany when really the Bush went to war in Iraq, and we are really inspired by that. In fact, we have a very strong, you know, we have a very strong anti-war tradition. We have a very, but in the last 10 years there was a decline, and that decline was resulted in really not getting mobilized. For the first time, we are really mobilizing back. In fact, when the middle of this December, we are going to have actually the first time an assembly against war and occupation, where really cross-current from all streams of political thoughts, all social movements are going to come together for a two-day workshop just to think of how to get back the anti-war movement in India. And as my organization, we are a very important contingent of it. So in this is where we are really inspired by the struggles here. And I really want to thank and say that American people, both here and elsewhere, what we have seen is really inspiring. In fact, we are trying to call one of the senior delegates from U.S., Coalition Against War. We are inviting them to India so they can share their experiences. And we really want to get inspired. I'm sure we're going to win this battle. I'm sure we're going to win this battle against Bush, if not in America, at least globally.